Well, hello there, Junkie. If you think you've already heard episode 23, you actually haven't. And if you haven't listened to episode 23 yet, just bear with me just a couple of seconds to explain what went wrong. I have been banging my head against the wall trying to finish Pandemic. That's my head. And I got all scrambly about the noodly appendage that is inside of my skull. And the way this usually works is episode number 23 of the MVP... I put in audiobook chapter 22. We got a little bit behind earlier, and now it works so that the audiobook chapter is one behind the podcast episodes. Very easy to put together. But yesterday, when I was creating the episode for you all, instead of putting in audiobook chapter number 22 into podcast episode number 23, I got it reversed, and I put an audiobook chapter 24 into podcast episode 23, thereby screwing you out of two episodes of continuity. And I very much apologize for putting things in out of order. Really sorry. It would drive me crazy if I was you and I was listening, trying to figure out what the hell was going on. So sorry about that. What we're going to do is I'm redoing episode 23 as the whole thing, just as it was with the intro and everything, putting in the correct audiobook episode 22 into podcast episode 23. So now if you listen to the podcast episode 22, the story picks up right where it left off here for episode 23. If none of that makes any sense, don't worry about it. Just throw out the other episode. You've got this episode. Enjoy. Of course, I go a little bit longer than my 4 minutes of fury. And then for next week, we will be back on track for the MVP episode 24. Everything will line up. Everything will be beautiful. And hopefully these bruises in my forehead will fade. So without further ado, we're going to roll right into it. I'm jumping right into the ad because it's exactly the same as it should be. Thank you for your patience. And again, we apologize for gunking up your entertainment experience. Episode number 23 of the MVP is brought to you by Stamps.com. Want to hear a good one? Hey, let's take a quick trip to the post office. That's funny. You know why? Because a trip to the post office is never quick. You gotta drive there. You gotta find parking. It's a hassle. So do what I do. Use Stamps.com instead. Stamps.com is the quick and easy way to get postage on demand for any business. Buy official U.S. postage for any letter or package with your own computer and print it with your own printer. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale that calculates the exact postage you need for any class of mail. We here at Dark Overlord Media, we love our Stamps.com. We use to ship all of your books and all of your t-shirts. And right now, you can use my last name, Sigler, for a special offer. It's a no-risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer, which includes the aforementioned digital scale and 55 big ones in free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Sigler. That's Stamps.com. Enter S-I-G-L-E-R. And now on with our story. Quick trip to the post office. Welcome to the MVP, book 4 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The MVP is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with Book 1, The Rookie, Book 2, The Starter, and Book 3, The All-Pro, is available as a full-length, unabridged digital audiobook download as an ebook for Kindle, Nook, iPad, iPhone, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback. The MVP is also available as a signed, numbered, limited-run collector's edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Hello, junkies. Yes, I got to visit the Joe Rogan Experience podcast just last week. And if you are a new listener, thanks to that show, I welcome you. I posted the full hour and a half interview on video up at scottsigler.com. You can also see that over at Joe Rogan's website. Just Google Joe Rogan, and I will see if we can include the audio for that in a future episode of A Friday Fix. Just a couple days left till I'm done with the Pandemic third draft. It is hell. This is writing hell. Not enjoying it at all, but you know what? Ah, junkies, that's the price you have to pay for creating a work that you're willing to go drop $24.95 on. I don't mind putting in the 14 hours a day and going without the food. As long as you're happy with the final story, I don't mind, Allah. Sigler Ascension Day is coming. Those of you who have been around for a while, you recognize the high holy holiday that is April 1st. It is Sigler Ascension Day. That's the day we launched Ancestor way back in the nether regions of history. And we hit number one in horror, number one in sci-fi, the number two fiction book overall at Amazon.com. Blew the doors off the publishing industry. This is before ebooks, ladies and gentlemen. So it was straight up $15 gangsta trade paperback that we did that with. Since then, it has been a cosmic, wonderful day of Sigler occurrences. But this time, we've got a crazy, crazy Sigler Ascension Day offer going for you. On April 1st only, you can purchase the Rookie ebook at Amazon for your Kindle for 41 cents. That's right, 41 cents for your Kindle. That's a great time to gift it to everyone that you know who would like this kind of book. Maybe like, I don't know if I want to read that book. You can gift it to them for 41 cents. Shoot, for $4.10, you can gift it to like 10 people. Oh, I'm sorry. You're not a Kindle user. Well, that's cool because you can also purchase the Rookie paperback from scottsigler.com/store from our site for just 41 cents plus shipping. That's right, the paperback for 41 cents. Get it for one April 1st. I'll go slow next time. But wait, there's more. You can purchase the Rookie and the Starter paperbacks together, both of them, for $4.10 plus shipping. What a deal! What a deal. So get ready for April 1st. Buy paperback copies for your neighborhood school. Stock up on presents for Christmas. Buy them for your kids. Buy them for your brother, sister, friends. Whatever the hell you want. Get ready to gift those copies of The Rookie for 41 cents from Amazon.com. Get ready to order those paperbacks. Again, April 1st only. We think it's going to be a good time, and we want you guys to join us for Sigler Ascension Day. After this episode, I have 28 new junkie shoutouts and a promo for Paul Cooley's Garaga's Children Ancients. He is doing an April Fiends Day pre-order for signed numbered limited edition copies, and you want to check that promo out. Stay tuned for that after the episode, and now let's get into it. The MVP, episode number 23. Bumper Puff at his side, Quentin stepped off the shuttle into a roar of anger and hatred. Buddha City Station's sprawling landing deck was as he remembered it, filled with shuttles and small transport ships, bustling crews and fluttering Kredorakians. The air smelled of combustion exhaust, rubber, and sweat. Mostly human sentients walked along clearly marked pathways that steered them clear of industrial trucks and lev sleds that loaded and unloaded cargo from across the galaxy. As the Purist Nation's only intergalactic port that allowed alien races, as the sole trade gateway to 11 billion nation citizens, Buddha City Station ran full out at all times. That part was as Quentin remembered, but this time there was something new. Fences had been erected that sectioned off large areas. In front of those fences, the green armored presence of the Buddha City Station police, their dark face shields making them both intimidating and anonymous. Behind those fences, shouting, angry, blue-clad people packed in close together, pushing against the chain link. The people held up signs, both holo and paper, signs that said things as hateful as their voices. Devil's ropes go home. Barnes consorts with the satanic races. I hope you like the heat because hell is waiting. High One hates the letter X. Satan takes many forms. Hey Barnes, if you don't die on the field, we'll get you after the game. Quentin actually felt embarrassed. He'd spent so much time in racially integrated Ionath City that he'd forgotten this kind of hate existed anywhere outside the Blessed Lamb. Well, exist it did, especially in the system of his birth.
They don't seem happy, Bumblepuff said. Funny, I thought there would be cake.
Do you even eat cake?
It's a figure of speech, the captain said. Our creator was apparently quite fond of it. When she was biological, of course, before she uploaded.
Quentin started to walk off the ramp, but a big three-fingered pincer pressed against his chest, keeping him in place. Chodo the Bright stepped in front of him, his one eye scanning the hostile crowd.
You stay behind me, Quentin. You as well, Bumblepuff.
Vyrak walked out to join Chodo.
I despise these primitive screwheads.
Vyrak didn't like Quentin, and Quentin didn't like Vyrak, But for some things, team came first. Quentin and Bumberpuff followed Virac and Chodo off the ramp. The other First Shuttle players close behind. John stared at the protesters. He hocked a loogie and spat it on the landing bay deck.
I'd like to booger the lot of them. Wow, Q, now I know where you get your sparkling personality.
Don't lump me in with these jerks, Quentin said. I got nothing to do with this.
John shrugged. You can take the boy out of the hate, but a zebra's spots run deep scrolled across his face. John was just joking, probably, but Quentin felt his face flush hot. Becca walked up to stand by his side.
Quentin, are you okay?
He nodded.
Yeah, I'm fine.
He wasn't fine. He looked out at the fenced-in mass of hate. He flashed back to Bumberpuff's words on the viewing deck. Are we safe? Quentin didn't feel safe. Not one bit.
They hadn't even left the landing deck, and already this was the most hostile place the Krakens had ever played.
A column of humans in green armored riot gear walked across the bay toward the Krakens. Quentin felt his stomach churn, felt an echo of the fear he'd once known from looking at men like these. Buddha City Station Police, also known as the Greens. They held shock sticks in one hand, kept the other hand on the hilt of their holstered nail guns. Those pistols fired high-density plastic fastener, the same nails used for any internal station construction. The fasteners would put a nasty hole in people, would shoot through doors and most internal walls, but would bend and flatten if they hit the station's outer hull. That little bit of physics let the trigger-happy Greens shoot at will without concern for punching a hole into space. A white infinity symbol on a shield marked the left breast of each guard's chest armor. Each man's name was stenciled below that shield. The Greens wielded significant authority on Buddha City. Only the Bats had more pull, but the Bats rarely got involved. Day-to-day order and discipline fell to the Greens. On a station with a 500,000 residents, a station that included organized crime of all stripes and was the center point for smuggling throughout the Purist Nation, the Greens were known as the biggest gang in town. The column stopped in front of Quentin and Masal the Efficient, who, as usual, had magically appeared from nowhere. The first man in the column had the name J. Cartwright stenciled on his armor.
I'm Officer Cartwright, he said. I'm in charge of the security detail.
Masal took a step forward.
Elder Cartwright, we are glad that...
Cartwright's stun stick whipped down. Quentin thought it would hammer Masal's head, but the end of the stick stopped an inch from the worker's softball-sized eye.
You call me officer, Cartwright said. I'm not an elder, understand?
Masal's eye swirled with crimson and pink.
Yes, officer, I understand.
Good, Cartwright said. All of you, come with me.
The green-armored police surrounded the Krakens as if the Krakens were criminals. Hands patted stun sticks, fingers wiggled on gun handles. John huffed.
They don't look so tough.
Quentin reached out and grabbed John's arm.
Uncle Johnny, not here. I've seen these guys in action before.
They can't touch me, John said. GFL immunity. I might want to test the quality of that armor they're wearing, you know?
John, if you do something, you won't just get us sticked.
Quentin pointed to the angry crowd pressing against the chain-link fence.
You'll antagonize them. We're here to play football, not get into a fight, you understand?
John's eyes narrowed in a way that wordlessly said, Who do you think you're bossing around? Quentin didn't like the expression, not one bit. John glanced briefly at Becca, then back at Quentin. In that moment, Quentin realized that he had just embarrassed John in front of his girlfriend.
Okay, Q, John said. I'll play nice. Thank you so much for the behavioral correction.
He snapped his arm free and walked away, as far as he could within the boundary of the police escort. Officer Cartwright waved his stun stick in the air.
All visitors, keep your hands and your feet inside the perimeter. Try not to make eye contact with the crowd. It's a few hundred yards to the left train that'll take you to the stadium where you'll be more secure.
Cartwright started walking. His men followed, ushering the Krakens along like cattle. A wheel truck started towing the shuttle to an airlock for a return trip to the touchback. As Quentin walked, he couldn't help but give the protesters one last look.
4 years ago, how many of those same people cheered my name? And now they want me dead.
The Krakens gathered in the tunnel of Infinity Stadium. Quentin and John were in front. As captains, it was their honor to lead the team out and to do the pregame coin toss at midfield. With them was a Prawat, Katzenbaum Weasley. Quentin had chosen him as honorary captain for two reasons. It was Weasley's first start at free safety, and it was a giant slap in the face to the racist Purist Nation crowd. Quentin looked out at the field, a deep green lined with white. It was Kentucky bluegrass, imported from Earth and cultivated on a station agriculture center solely dedicated to growing it. That was one of the perks of being the richest city in the nation. While some 80% of the population lived below the poverty line, many of those starving, the station could afford to pay a staff of 25 to do nothing but grow grass. That fact made Quentin feel horrible that he loved playing on that field. It was always firm and pliant, great for making fast cuts. The announcer's voice echoed through the dome stadium.
Devout worshippers, the Church of Purism would like to welcome our visiting team, the INF Krakens!
Quentin, John, and Katzenbaum led the team onto the field amidst a wave of polite applause. Quentin could practically feel the hate, the fear, the suspicion. But to boo or curse at visitors wouldn't be very purist. So much of the religion revolved around thinking one thing, but saying and doing another. With a capacity crowd of 45,000, this was the smallest stadium in Tier 1. Row after row of blue-clad fans filled the stands. GFL tickets were expensive, after all, and for the most part, only confirmed church members could afford them. As Quentin ran to the sidelines, he was taken aback by the sameness of the crowd. Nothing but humans in blue robes. While other races were welcome to trade on Buddha City, they weren't welcome to do anything else. He and his teammates gathered at the sidelines. Quentin started to talk, but before he could say anything, John Tweedy started screaming.
We get things back on track right now!
John banged a fist against his armored chest.
Everyone steps up! Everyone does their thing! If we go 1-4, that will suck, so let's make sure we don't!
The defensive players shouted in support. So did some of the offensive players, but others gave half-hearted encouragement, and still others just looked confused. They had been expecting Quentin to lead the pregame chant. John raised his right fist.
Bring it in!
The players pressed closer, raising their hands to John's. Quentin thought of saying something, but to do so now would cause even more confusion, so he raised his hand to John's just like everyone else did.
Destroy on three, John said. 1, 2, 3!
Destroy, destroy, destroy!
The Krakens broke up and spread down the sideline. Quentin wondered what had just happened. Was John still mad about that incident on the landing deck? Was he showing off for Becca? Or maybe he was showing that Quentin didn't have to run everything all the time. The yell of the announcer's voice drew Quentin's attention back to the tunnel.
And now, chosen people of the High One, bring your hands together and let the heavens hear a joyous sound as we welcome our blessed home team, the Buddha City Elite!
For lack of a better word, the crowd lost its collective mind. Quentin saw people leaping, screaming, and falling on each other. He saw people fainting, raising their hands to the sky. From long years of experience, he knew some of them were speaking in tongues. They probably loved football, sure, but that wasn't the real reason for such over-the-top excitement. If they didn't cheer loud enough, intensely enough, someone in the seat behind them or from a nearby row might report that person as not having enough love for the church. That could lead to a purity investigation. A purity investigation always led to something bad. Sometimes it was a public dressing down. Other times, it was a public flogging. Occasionally, even for the confirmed, a purity investigation meant death. Once the investigation started, something had to be wrong because High One was never mistaken. His native religion corrupted everything, even the simple joy of watching a football game. The elite players stormed onto the field. Purist racism didn't extend to the level where football games were unwinnable, it seemed. When it came to the gridiron, the key, the sklorno, and the quith were downright regular folk. Buddha City's uniforms were something to behold. When Quentin played in the PNFL, all teams had plain uniforms. Save for the primary color of each team, in fact, the uniforms were identical to those of the Mecovi Raiders. A silver helmet with a black stripe down the middle, black jersey with a silver Raiders on the chest and a silver number beneath,
silver leg armor, black shoes. No individuality, no decoration, the same template applied to each of the league's 12 teams. Lack of decoration bespoke modesty, humility in the face of the High One who had gifted each of these players and coaches with their unique abilities. That modesty was nowhere to be seen on the uniforms of the Buddha City Elite. White face masked, emerald-green helmets sparkled in the stadium lights. A wide, white-lined black stripe ran down the middle of the helmet. On each side was a white infinity symbol trimmed in black. The jerseys were also a sparkling emerald green. A wide, black-trimmed white stripe started on each shoulder pad and narrowed to a point below the center of each race's respective chest. Black-lined white numbers sat nestled above the V made by the narrowing shoulder stripes. Below the point of that V, the word ELITE, also in black-lined white. A black belt wrapped around emerald-green leg armor and shoes. Wide black-lined white stripes ran from the hips to a point atop each knee. Quentin recognized the long gait of a human. Number 46, Rick Warburg. Quentin didn't follow the progress of offensive players because he didn't face them on the field. But from what little he'd seen, Warburg was having a great season. Perth, however, was a different story. Quentin would face her on the field. Up until the preseason, she had been part of the orange and the black. He knew her in-depth familiarity with the Ionath offense would pose a problem as the afternoon wore on. The elite gathered on their sideline, jumping, shouting, going through their own pregame ritual. Sure, they were newly promoted, but this season they had two victories to the Kraken's one. Whistles blew. The Zeebs fluttered to midfield and called the captains of both sides for the coin toss. Time to get down to business. The elite played a conservative defense, making sure they didn't get burned on big plays. That left the underneath routes mostly open. Quentin took what they gave him, throwing out patterns to Denver, Halawa, and Milford, crossing routes to Terah the Freak and hooks to George Starcher. On the first drive, Quentin went 8-for-8 for 78 yards, completing a 7-minute drive with a 5-yard pass to Yasud Murphy for the touchdown. Buddha City ran a spread offense, so-called because 5 receivers stretched from one sideline to the other. On most plays, elite quarterback Gary Lindros lined up in the shotgun with an empty backfield. That meant no running back or fullback to help with the pass rush of defensive ends Alexander Michnik or Ibrahim Komini. Lindros had to take the snap, quickly check through his receivers, then deliver the ball fast or he'd get his head taken off. Lindros did just that, hitting short slants and hooks in much the same way Quentin had done. Ionath's Prawat defensive backs were still learning. Quick hitting, almost instant throws left them a half step late to knock down the ball. Lindros wasn't as efficient as Quentin, but he got the job done. On the elite's first drive, he went 7 of 11 for 80 yards, tying the game on a 7-yard corner fade touchdown pass to Metier. In the second quarter, both teams struggled to move the ball into scoring position. The elite chewed up a lot of clock with slow, controlled drives. They took the lead with just 1 minute and 32 seconds to play when Lindros hit Warburg on a 3-yard touchdown pass. On the very next drive, Quentin kicked in the 2-minute offense, short passes designed to get receivers out of bounds to stop the clock. The defensive backs came up to try and stop these passes, and when they did, Quentin dropped back 5 steps, let Denver sprint down the field, and he hit her in the end zone's back corner for a 56-yard touchdown strike. At the half, the two teams were tied 14-all. The elite strategy was obvious. Slow down the game, chew up as much time as possible, and keep the ball out of Quentin's hands. And that strategy was working. In the second half, Rick Warburg took over the game. Lindros hit him repeatedly, on curl patterns over the middle and short out routes. John Tweedy, Virak the Mean, and Chota the Bright brought the house, hitting Warburg with everything they had. The big human gave better than he got. Midway through the third quarter, Warburg caught a hook pass, turned quick, and leveled a vicious head-to-head hit that knocked Virak the Mean out of the game. Rookie linebacker Pishor the Fang filled in and played well, but his inexperience showed when Warburg turned a short pass into a 22-yard touchdown after spinning off Pishore's attempted tackle. Aside from Quentin's long pass to Denver, the Elite just wouldn't give up the big play. Perth seemed to know where every receiver was going. She was always there to break up the deep passes. Quentin continued to complete short patterns. He almost couldn't miss. By the end of the third quarter, he'd completed 28 of 31 passes for 312 yards. At the end of the third quarter, Quentin hit Jude Tweedy on a wheel route to the left. Jude took the ball up the sidelines, outran the linebacker covering him, then ran over safety Bogalusa and high-stepped in for a touchdown to tie the game at 21-all. Alexander Michnik finally got to Lindros in the fourth quarter, dragging the quarterback down for a sack. But on the very next play, Lindros saw Bumberpuff in one-on-one coverage with wide receiver Metier. Metier ran a slant, and Lindros pump-faked, drawing Bumberpuff in. The Prowat only lost a step, but that was all the speedy Metier needed. Lindros threw long to the back of the end zone. Metier ran under it and caught it in stride for a 43-yard touchdown pass. Buddha City again had the lead, 28-21. On the next drive, Quentin hit Denver for 8, Starcher for 9, Terah for 15, then Terah again for 14. A Jude Tweedy run brought up 2nd and 8, then Denver dropped a pass. On 3rd down, Quentin suffered his only sack of the game when defensive tackle Don Wensoul beat his block and came in clean. Quentin barely had time to duck before the key was on him. That brought up 4th and 13 on the Elite 30. Ariok Morningstar came in and nailed a 47-yard field goal, cutting the lead to 28-24. Elite coach Ezekiel Graber had the lead and wanted to burn up as much clock as possible. He called runs up the middle and screen passes, making sure the ball stayed inbounds and the clock kept ticking. The Kraken's defense couldn't force a stop and couldn't force a turnover. When the Elite moved past the INF 30-yard line, the D had to start making changes. Hokor called a blitz, sending Pishore and Choto driving in hard to try and force a mistake. That left John Tweedy in single coverage on Warburg. Lindros saw the blitz coming. Knowing he would take a big hit, he stepped up and threw a bullet down the middle. Rick Warburg went up for it. John Tweedy raked at the man's arms before the ball even arrived. Pass interference flags flew, but they didn't matter, as Warburg somehow pulled in the pass one-handed while falling to his back. He landed in the end zone. Buddha City declined the penalty, keeping the touchdown. Quentin pulled on his helmet. 1 minute, 45 seconds to play, and the Elite led 35-24. Buddha City played a prevent defense, keeping defensive backs far downfield to prevent a big play. Quentin's two-minute offense worked his team down the field. Sometimes Kraken receivers got out of bounds, sometimes they didn't. The Krakens used all three timeouts on the drive. When Quentin finally delivered a 17-yard pass for Denver's second touchdown catch of the game, there were still 45 seconds left on the clock. Buddha City 35, INF 31. It would all come down to the onside kick. Ariok Morningstar ran toward the ball. He hit it lightly with lots of spin. The ball bounced forward 5 yards, then hit and sprang high into the air as the kickoff and kickoff return teams collided. Denver leapt for it, but so did Metier. The Elite wide receiver wrapped her tentacles around the ball and fell to the ground. The crowd of 45,000 confirmed churchies went wild. With the sound of defeat ringing in his ears, Quentin closed his eyes and hung his head. All the Elite had to do was take a knee twice. The game was over. The Ionath Krakens, once favored to reach the Galaxy Bowl, were now 1-4. Quentin walked to midfield, joining players from both sides who were greeting each other after the game. Despite the raw hostility of the Purist Nation fans and citizens, there was, ironically, little animosity between the teams. The Elite had just come in with a better game plan, a plan specifically tailored to beat Ionath. The two quarterbacks met at midfield. "Great game, rookie," Quentin said. "You tore it up." Lindros laughed. "Compared to your day, I was a scrub.
I almost feel bad that you threw for over 400 yards and lost. He winked. Almost.
Good luck this season.
Quentin slapped his opposite shoulder pad, then walked over to Ezekiel Graber, coach of the elite. Quentin didn't want to speak to the man, but it would be an insult to not give him the credit he deserved.
Coach Graber, congrats on the win.
Graber turned and smiled at Quentin. The infinity tattoo on his forehead looked even more faded than when Quentin had played for the man 4 years earlier.
Great game, Barnes, Graber said. We squeaked out of this one.
Quentin clenched his teeth and nodded.
Metayer had a whale of a game. Looks like your satanic races played well today.
He knew he shouldn't have said that, but he couldn't help the dig. The last time he'd seen Graber had been when Quentin was leaving the Raiders. Graber had tried to make him stay by saying that Quentin wasn't ready for the big time, and that Quentin would be corrupted by exposure to the satanic races. How funny that when Graber became a coach in the GFL, those same satanic races weren't so satanic.
She played well, Graber said. High One is helping some of the sentients see the light, Quentin. I'm helping them to come around to our ways.
Quentin smiled and shook his head. Graber was justifying his beliefs against his actions? Of course, that was the way of purism. For a religion of endless, unforgiving rules, there always seemed to be a way to make anything acceptable if it suited you.
Have a great season, coach, Quentin said, then walked off to find Rick Warburg.
Warburg was standing with John, Jew, and Virak. Virak's middle arm was in a sling. No one had liked Rick when he played for the Krakens, but there was no denying his performance had led the elite to a victory. The gathering of sentients showed Quentin something sports had taught him a long time ago. Respect and like are two different things.
Rick, you killed us, Quentin said. Great game.
Warburg was all smiles.
Thank you, Quentin. You were unstoppable today. Just imagine what we could have done together this season.
Quentin nodded.
Yeah, like you wanted to stay in Ionath.
Rick shrugged.
No, not really. Still, I hope you guys are around next year for a rematch.
John's chest puffed up.
What do you mean, around next year? If you guys keep winning, we can get our rematch in the playoffs, and we'll kick your asses there.
Warburg threw back his head and laughed.
Playoffs? Maybe you guys should worry about Shora instead of the playoffs. If you lose to the Warlords next week, you'll officially have the worst record in football. Forget the playoffs, man. I'll see you next year, unless you get relegated.
Rick turned and jogged off the field.
I'll gut you and wear your stomach as a hat, scrolled across John's sweaty face.
Strong words, but all four of them knew that Rick was right. The playoffs were the last of Ionath's concerns.
That was the MVP episode number 23. Are they doing it? Are the Krakens turning the season around, or is it too damn late to make anything happen? You'll just have to keep listening to find out. I told you that I had 28 new junkie shoutouts for you, and I do. Coming up right after these, I've got that promo for Paul Cooley's Garagus Children Ancients. Do check that out. But for now, 28 people who signed up with profiles over at scottsigler.com. Lovely, independent, intelligent, forward-thinking people who possibly are meat eaters, because meat eaters, you know, we wouldn't be here if we didn't kill things to eat them. Can you imagine what the world would be like if we had tried to become the sentient organism on this planet and just left all the other predators, just leave them around, no big deal, don't mind. We ate all them! We ate them. The people who ate animals, and vegetarians are included because someone, you know, back in your genetic history, your lineage, if you will, they ate animals. So you sort of, you're grandfathered in. The 28 people who signed up with profiles at scottsigler.com, which you should do too, are from Canada. I love Scott's mom. Cole from Great Britain. Kaz the Cactus. And Bobby. And my countrymen and countrywomen from the United States of America. Split Switch. Noseman 1234.
Death's Embrace.
Geraldle. Pale Man, Phobathian, Upright Monkey, Serendiana, Mortez 1, Camel Joe,
Bullet Bob,
It's All Good, Sparkit 3N, I Am Quentin Barnes, Mr. Fister, Sean Peacock, Dire Wolf Barb, Kay Lemley, Jim B03, El Cockwee,
Chief Big Dog, Meltzer 01, Crappy Meat Shield, and Steelers 4 Tier 1.
I like that one. That one's pretty good. But I'm not the one who gets to pick the new junkie name. That is chosen by my best buddy and business partner, A. Kovacs, a real girl herself. Her favorite new junkie name is Upright Monkey because, quote, "I love Scott's mom was too much even for me," end quote.
That's right. We're not like all of your other left-centered liberal science fiction authors. Pandering does not float here. We don't pander to one side or the other, nor do we accept people pandering to me. We do accept cash, though, which is completely, completely different. It's a capitalist thing.
Compliments don't pay the rent. You know what I'm saying? But cash, that always dictates policy.
Upright Monkey, you, what a prize for you today. I used to call it the prize closet. Now I'm just going to call it what it is, the Chamber of Riches. That's because we have the best prizes in all of podcasting. I've got something so special for you today. It could make you a millionaire. Now, the United States penny is made out of, I'm going to say it's made out of copper, but some smart ass out there is going, no, that happens to be a nickel dilithium alloy that's just got copper sheeting on top of it. Everybody knows this. Anyways, copper equals penny. I have a penny here, circa 1983. Now, I used to be a coin collector back in the day, and I know rarity when I see it. And Upright Monkey, I have to say, this penny, normally, pennies have a picture of Abraham Lincoln on them. I'm pretty sure this one has Bob Hope. I'm pretty sure this is Bob Hope with his hair done up a little bit. And he's supposed to look like Abraham Lincoln. It's a passable facsimile thereof, but it's Bob Hope. It's a Bob Hope penny. And you get that. I'm going to see, I'm setting that right aside right now. Setting that aside. That is for you for being named the new favorite new junkie name of the week. I now finish up with that promo for Paul Cooley's Garaga's Children, and I will talk to you all. Don't forget Sigler Ascension Day, April 1st. 41-cent ebooks on the Kindle store, 41-cent rookie paperbacks, $4.10 for the rookie and the starter on paperback. Real soon.
Before the written word, his children preyed upon ancient man. Its Nephilim and worshippers have affected Sumer, the Indus Valley, the founding of Judaism, and even the ancient Egyptian monarchy. The legend of its children, its existence, and the warriors who fight its presence have been passed down from generation to generation. Garaga's Children, Ancients, the first six stories of Paul Ellard Cooley's Parsec Award-nominated series. On April 1st, 2013, own a piece of history by ordering your own signed, numbered, limited edition hardcover featuring bonus materials never before released. Please visit shadowpublications.com for more information.
We don't believe in happy endings.
You have been listening to The MVP, Book 4 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's Alive by the band Lacuna Coil.